To be honest, I have Abby, and that's pretty much the only friend I have. I have a lot of fair weather friends, and like, I've come to realize like they're good for shopping and movies, but if I have a problem, they won't understand me. Not because they're not Chinese adopted like Abby. They just don't, they care more about themselves than they do about others. And so I've come to realize like those people are good for like little like hangouts and everything, but when it comes down to the serious things, they're not really good. And I've talked to Abby, and Abby has never experienced any of the like rude, ignorant comments that I have had to go through. And I wonder why. Maybe she just has like better friends than I do. But like, just recently, I've just come to realize like all the rude and ignorant things people have been saying to me. I don't know why, but I've just, lately people have just been saying more rude things to me.
You mentioned Culture Camp. Is that the FCC Culture Camp here in Austin? Have you gone to that pretty consistently?
I was there the first year it began.
Does that give you kind of a place to be with people who get it?
Yes, I've always loved going to the camp, but like this past year, for some reason, camp meant a lot more to me, maybe because it was the last year, I thought that I just kind of like cherished everything, and I really enjoyed this last year's camp. And like, I don't know, I was just like really like touched and like really like moved by the camp this past year. And I just like was really into like all the discussions, and like I was just like really understanding and like just like wanting to reach out to more people this past year, and like really enjoyed the therapy times with the adoption therapist. For some reason, like this year, like really meant more to me than all the past years have.
What was that like for you when you were younger? Did you like it when you were younger?
When I was younger and like a camper, I enjoyed it, and like it was a really great time to like hang out with other people that like understood where I was coming from and like how I was feeling and like how I was kind of like raised up in my history and past and stuff. But like as I transitioned to like being a counselor, like the camp kind of switched, because now I was like having to be the leader to other kids. And so it like really pushed me to like think and really like reflect on like how I feel so that I could share it to others instead of like people asking me. And like it was a different experience, but I've enjoyed every year of it.
So having this community, having Abby, has given you some sense of belonging, even with all the other dopes out there and their dopey comments. And you've kind of come to a place where you're beginning, or maybe not beginning, maybe it's been going on for a while, to think about a birth parent search. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that. What was it like when you were younger, as you processed this story your mother told you in the car? Mm-hmm. I was also in the car when Caroline was asking me about this, like turning left, sweating bullets. So I don't know what it is about the car. Oh yeah. Yeah. Thinking, don't die. Just make this left turn. As I'm trying to explain this, there are so many ways this is anxiety producing. So tell me about, as you got older, you know, you hear this news, you're 2.5 years old. Oh, you were in another lady's tummy. Whatever, mom, I'm tired. I'm out. Yeah. So later, how did that begin to gel? How did you understand it?
I've always really wanted to like find out my history and like want to find my birth family. But like as I was watching the movie Twinster and like the movie Somewhere Between, I really wanted to like, there was something that like just sparked a fire that really wanted me to find my birth family. And like watching Twinster, I was like, oh, I so want to find my birth family, and like I want to have a twin. That's what I want. I want to have a twin.
Yeah. Okay, so these documentaries are very powerful.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yes. These real people that are mm-hmm. really like you
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. have actually found mm-hmm. biological parents, birth parents, siblings. Mm-hmm. So does it feel like something that's possible to you that maybe before seemed impossible?
I think, like, with talking to Shen Shen, it made it more possible for me to find it by her saying all these things that, like, the news will help and, like, my birth mom can't be prosecuted. Like, it made it more possible and made it more like it could become a reality instead of a fantasy. So I think talking to other people has made it more possible to me.
How big a concern in the past has been your worry about your birth mom and what might legally happen?
I don't know if I ever really thought about it, but like I was always like hoping that communism would fall so that she could just step out on her own and be like, hey, I placed my daughter here on roughly this day and she's from here, and I thought that was how I was gonna find her, so that like I always imagined her never like getting in trouble. But I always imagined her wanting to find me. So that's what I'm hoping, that she also wants to like create a relationship with me and doesn't just like want to eliminate me from her life.
Have you thought much about the fact that you can't know what the circumstances might be? And so you might, if let's say you did find her, you might find someone who's thrilled to be reunited, and it would be very bittersweet, but, you know, happy. There's a possibility, though, that you might find a story you didn't expect. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, have you wrestled with that at all? The possibility that it could be a not happy, you know, a really not happy story. You know, there are a lot of different stories.
Like, if she doesn't want to create a relationship with me, I think it'd be like, it kind of hurt and I'd be pained by it, but I think I could live with it. Like, I'm happy where I am and I'm happy with the life that I've been given. So either way is a happy ending to me, because I love the family that I'm with, and I know that my life here is like 1,000 times better than my life would have been in China. So I'm just thankful that she did what she did. And, like, there's no anger, and there'll never be any anger towards her for whatever decision she makes. If she wants to find me or if she doesn't want to find me, I'm fine with that. But I do want to find her.
So whatever the story is, you want to know it.
Yes.
And what will it, why? I mean, I know that sounds like a strange question, but why? You love your parents. They're here with you. You're obviously very supportive. Why does it matter?
Well, that's kind of how I've been living for like the past 14, 15 years. I just was like, okay, I want to find my birth mom, but if she doesn't want to find me, that's okay. Like, I'm okay with like kind of not knowing the first like 13 months of my life. But then this past year, I've been like, I do, like, I've just, like, I've been going kind of through this, like, identity, like, crisis of, like, who am I? Like, I know who I am 13 months up, but, like, it's important to me, like, it has just become important to me to know what happened to me 13 months and before. Like, there are, like, certain things that, like, I don't know that I want to know, like, for my own sake, just to, like, know like who I am, because like I don't know, there's just like a missing puzzle piece that I want to find, and I believe that it is 13 months prior to me being adopted. Like, I want to know what it is. Like, it's important to me to know my identity by finding this, is what I believe.
Do you think, this is sort of an odd question, do you think that this would feel quite the way it does if you had not seen Twinsters and Somewhere Between?
I, like, when did Twinsters come out? Like, when did we see Twinsters?
A year or two ago.
Was it before or after adoption camp? I feel like it was, I feel like it was after adoption camp. So I think, had I not seen Twinsters or Somewhere in Between, like, I think I would still be the way I am now, because like those movies just like wanted me to like have a relationship with them and want to find them in the way of like just wanting to find a sibling. But I've always wanted to know where I came from, and I've always wanted to know who my birth family was. But just recently, I've wanted to know for the sake of who am I.
It would give you a fuller sense, it sounds like, of your identity.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm going to ask your parents a couple of questions. Is that okay?
Yes.
If we do this all together like this, because it seems like it feels like we're having one conversation. Mm-hmm. So how is this for you? The desire for a birth parent search.
Oh, I'm all for it. She has really always felt very strong about China, about her connection, and some kids don't. Some adopted children, if they're fine with, even Abby, they're just fine with their story, what they know of it, and they're fine with who they are, and they don't really have that overwhelming curiosity about it. But Hannah always has. And, you know, for a while, when I first realized this was sort of making her unhappy as she got to be about 10 or 11 or 12, I thought, you have really overdone it with the pride, the China pride thing. Because when she was little, I would say, she was just a toddler, we'd see a pretty woman on the street, and I would say, I would want her to be proud of China. And, you know, so I would always talk about China, and then I would say, and where is that pretty woman from? And she'd say, she China. And so, you know, like I would really build up China in her mind, and I thought, you have done this to her. You have created this overwhelming curiosity, but I don't think that now. I think that God put this in her heart, and she will follow it. And whatever she finds, she'll be fine with it. You know, that's how I feel.
And how about you, Dad?
I could see early on that because she would identify somebody, she wasn't 2 years old, if she would see somebody that was Asian, she'd go, she China. And so mm-hmm. she would do that on her own. Mm-hmm. And then when the Olympics in 2008, you know, you're watching the Olympics and who you're cheering for, it was very strong whenever China would do anything that you could see that she had an immense pride and reaching back, that there was a very strong identity there. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that, you know, we have taken from that time, whatever she wants to do, that she can do that.
Is it scary at all for either of you? The idea that, I mean, let's say Hannah found her birth parents. Mm-hmm. How does it feel, the idea of kind of making room for another set of parents?
Mm-hmm. I think for the young mother, that's a scary thing. I think for a young adoptive mother, that they never want to think about the other mother coming back in their life, you know, and especially if it's a domestic adoption. But once you start looking at things through their eyes and seeing that she wants this and that no one's going to take my place, and then you start wanting it. And then that's how I feel. I want it. I want it for her. Just, I want to see it in my lifetime, you know.
How about you?
Yeah, I think almost from the beginning I was hoping that the barriers would come down so she could do that, because it's part of her family, and it's where, you know, it's another part, and like she said, there's a piece of the puzzle missing, and what's the best way to do that, and that's is to reach back. And like Hannah said, and Brendan, we've had these conversations before, you know, the way she was taken care of to get her to here showed there was a great deal of love, and that you know, she blessed us, and
yeah.
Hope she can reach back.
Yeah. What did you know about China, and why did you decide to adopt from China? How old were you? Kind of, what was the decision making like?
Both of you. There's a sequence going.
Yeah, I was single, and I married Larry after we got back from China. When I started the process, we were not dating or anything. It was a year and a half process, so I was a single parent, and it was a God thing. It was I was 48. I had looked at adopting from China at 38, and I didn't have a house, and I wasn't financially stable, and I put it away But China was always the country of all the adoptive things that I was most interested in. I think it's because it was the girls. All the girls were there because they were girls, most of them. And I come from an all-male family. So that was attractive to me. And so, but then I put it away and, you know, just lived my life as a single person. And then basically the money fell on me. At the same time, my brother, who is adoptive father, told me, if you miss out on this, being a parent, you've missed out on the best part of life. And he said that to me. So it was so profound. It was like on Easter of that year. And then all of a sudden the money came to me, and money doesn't fall on me. Look around, you know.
Did you win the lottery?
No, my parents just decided to sell the trees off the land that they own and split that with us. And that came to about $20,000. Mm-hmm. And and I asked God, I prayed like for several days before. And I have what I call my letter from God. And I thought, you know, I'm not even very strong with God. But this is very, very important. And I have to have it in writing from God that I should do this. And so we have this thing up here, what we have in the China test called My Letter from God, you know. And it came in the form of, took this magazine every year. I used to date the production manager of Texas Monthly Magazine. So that's the only one I've ever subscribed to. There's probably three over there on the thing now. But I was looking through it, and I was praying constantly. I mean, I was praying constantly for a few days. It got so bad, I'd be sitting at the light, and I'd go, I bet if I turned my head right there, there'd be an Asian person there. And I'm like, sure enough, okay. Then that night, I'd go into HEB, and that night I counted 13 Asian people. I said, God, the universe is just telling me this. And so I just kept praying about it. And so I went to Mary's Hair Salon downtown. I got my hair cut. And then I said, God, you know what a doubter I am. I have to have this in writing. I don't care if you just send me an email and just say, do it, God. You know, but because I had the money and it was pressing on me so hard, you know. And here I am, 48 years old. Then I was looking through Texas Monthly. She's about to cut my hair, the girl who does it all the time. And I turned the page, and there was a half page ad, which of a little Asian girl sitting in a crib, and they don't have ads like this. And it said, it was an adoption ad, and it said, she won't have your eyes, but she will have your heart. And I tore it out, and I started crying and sobbing, and the girl couldn't hardly cut my hair, and I was just like, you don't understand what this is.
This is an email from God.
This is. And so I went and put down my first $3,300, and that's how it started. And I knew that God was telling me that. And I even called Texas Monthly and said, have you ever run this ad before? And I'd never seen it. And, you know, she could have been a girl from Mexico. It could have been a boy. It could have been, but it wasn't. And, you know, it was just speaking directly to me. And when God speaks to you, all you can do is cry. It's just when you realize God took the time to speak to me, you know. So that's what I believed happened. And so we started the process. So meanwhile, then we find a father.
Okay. this is so, I mean, wow. Okay, so you start this, God sends email in the form of the ad in Texas Monthly while you're in the hair salon.
Yes.
And you start the process. And your family also is like, I mean, God sent like a previous email in the form of your brother and the trees on your parents' land.
Yes.
And, you know, so everything is that the universe is aligning here.
Right.
Did you have any anxiety about doing this? Or no, maybe not anxiety. I don't even know why I asked that, but I'll ask it anyway, about doing this as a single parent.
Like, I did have some during that time, during that long year and a half wait, you know, just every now and then. But then I just had, once you've committed and you realize God has told me this is fine to do, that this is going to go well, then I, you know, I just went with that. But every now and then you'll have fears of, what if the baby's not healthy, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's just.
So you start the process and then this guy comes along. So you get engaged. And then you ended up, you were engaged when you ended up going to China.
Yeah.
But not as the adoptive parent. So really only 3 months ago did you officially become Hannah's adoptive dad. How did you, Larry, process the decision? China, did you know anything about China? Or,
Really, I did not. And it was, she told me what she was doing. The funny thing about it, I'd been single for 15 years. I had no overwhelming desire to be married, but felt like there was a reason I was being sent to Austin. Mm-hmm. And so come down, we went through that whole process, and Hannah's been in our life since then, and we vacation together. I get 3 weeks of vacation now, so it's usually whether I'm down here or whether we're going somewhere, we usually kind of, some of the stuff I have done with my older daughters, this next year we're going to, in the summer we're going to just do kind of the upper Midwest. We're going to start in Kansas City where I live and then go to my older daughters in Arkansas, then down through Little Rock and over to Memphis and talk to Elvis and then back up to St. Louis. I've never been there before, so I thought it'd be fun. Then go to the arch so she can see that. She did a project about the arch one later on. And
if I can
get up the nerve, I'll go through the arch with her. We'll see. So, but that's what, no, I really didn't. And a lot of my friends that know, I'm just kind of pretty systematic in what I do. You really quit your job and you're moving to Austin. Wow. And we talked about this earlier today. My parents had passed away, so I had some money from their estate. I would have never made that commitment had I not had the financial backing to be able to do it. And so come down here. It took 11 months to find a job. Yeah. And then it was in Western Kansas. And so, I went up. It was in Dodge City, Kansas.
And I have a new baby. I'm 48.
Larry's, we're up in our 40s. And now Larry's unemployed. And 9/11 is hit. See? So as soon as I convince him to quit a job, a very stable job, where he's the HR manager of this big company, to come down here and just set up a business, I thought would be, he could be an HR consultant. And then 2 or 3 months later, 9/11. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there were no jobs to be had. We wait almost a year, and then he gets a call, from the meat industry. Well, we know you. Are you interested in coming up here and going to work in Dodge City, Kansas? And I'm sitting here going, Dodge City, Kansas.
Hey, he went to China for you.
I'm like,
you gotta go to Kansas for him.
Basically, he wanted the job, and I wanted to come back home.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
And so we tried to commute for a while, and that just took its toll on a marriage, we just grew apart, but Hannah and Larry never grew apart. Mm-hmm. And so we were talking this morning how we didn't really, we had the anger at first when we first divorced. We had it for a while, like people do, but that's all gone now. We're better friends than, we ever were.
When
we were married, and we would do anything for each other and we support each other in every way. So it's a good deal.
Well, it's interesting because we have a couple of divorces in our travel group. We have one death. One of the fathers was in remission with melanoma and died. And I've interviewed some families, where there's been divorce. And to me, it's a really important part of the story because we're like everyone else. Our lives are like everybody else's lives in that they go through transitions, just like other people's transitions. And so it's mm-hmm. I think it's important for everybody to sort of also see that these transitions are very manageable, that people get through them and come out actually in certain ways, sometimes better, right. Not the way you expected when you went in. How is this for you, Hannah?
I remember we were walking into like a Walgreens or something, and this was about the time when my mom and dad were getting a divorce, and my mom asked me, Hannah, if something ever happened to me, would you rather live with your dad or your cousin? And I was like, this is the most ridiculous question ever. What are you saying? I'd always choose dad. Like, what are you saying? And I thought that was like the most ridiculous question ever. Like, why would she ask something like this? But, yeah, like, I
was doing my wheel.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, your will? You weren't getting
involved? Oh, okay. Yeah, it's because like you have to, and I wanted to see.
Designate it.
Yeah. Designate a person. If something had to be, well, where would you want to go?
I was like, you must be insane. Like, I choose dad.
Yeah.
And how is it for you that your dad's long distance? How has that sort of worked out for you?
I just love what we have. Like sometimes when I was younger, I'd like get really upset when he'd leave, and like my mom would like hate for him to come because I'd get so attached, and like I'd just cry whenever he left. But now that I'm growing up, I'm like realizing like he's coming back. Like, why should I be upset? And so, but like when I was younger, it was hard that this was like long distance, but now I just love what we have, because now when I see him, we can like go do fun things, and like he doesn't have to be the bad parent. Mom's got both jobs.
Yeah, lucky mom.
Yeah, it's a vacation guy.
Mom's gonna do the travel. Oh my goodness, they travel.
Well, it sounds like you guys have kind of really come to a good place. And does it feel any different at all to be officially Hannah's dad?
Probably just a little bit, but not a great deal, because we always had a real strong relationship anyway. Probably just a little bit, like it is official, but really, I mean, she was in my will, just like the older two daughters are in my will. And so it really, I think a little bit, because it just now is official, but really my feelings toward her, no, it's always been very strong. So, and that didn't do it just making it official, but you know, that is in fact there. If something happens to me that, you know, there isn't a question for Social Security purposes or that she's my daughter and she'd be taken care of on that side. So, and she's just such a great kid. I mean, it's just a blessing. So,
that's a
fact. She's picking my nursing home.
And what prompted you to ask your dad to finalize the adoption?
I think we were just like talking about it when I was like 12 or so, and we just never got to it. And then like, I was like, I actually want this. Like, we need to get this done. Like, let's not just say it, but never do it. Like, let's take action and do it. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't think I felt different, like really like a huge difference after he adopted me. Like, I've always seen him as my dad. Like, there's no one else. So, but I just wanted to make it official. Yeah.
And what do you think you'll do with your Chinese? Go to college, major in Chinese. Do you have any goal in mind?
I think it'd be kind of cool to like just kind of see what living in China would be like for like not permanently and just like move to China and like become a Chinese citizen, but just like kind of maybe spend a few summers there or something, like kind of go back for a longer time than just 3 weeks this summer. But that's how I want to use it. And become fluent. I want to be fluent in Chinese. Mandarin, yes.